succession number 22636, reel 10.
Captain Wright, reel 10. You did something for the...
Yes, well, we had anti-personnel mines, which were quite useful if one wanted to detect a night attack. And I used to put these out in front of the four defended localities at night. And I can remember doing this in some deep sort of valley thing one night and coming back to the battalion. I had to go up the side of this very steep hill and over the top and down the other side. It was about midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning or something. And there was this mess tent full of chaps all drinking and being generally sort of entertaining. And I thought, what a splendid way to run it. I mean, they fought well and they played well and they were wonderful. And I had a quick drink and then walked back to my jeep and went back to our company, which this must have been well after Rasbun, I reflect, which was in Mongdor, which wasn't very far forward, but it was at least, we'd advanced quite a lot. And this was a small port, and it had a main street as well. And I went into our mess, which was a, I don't think it was a hole in the ground, I think it was a building. I rather forget now, but it was dark, and I knew my way around, and I went in to get myself a drink or something. And we had a battery there with two leads on it, and I, a car battery, and it gave us, and I staggered up and put these two things on to get some light. Whereupon I was cursed by the company commander, whom I've mentioned before, and told to put the light out, and asked, don't you know there's a war on? Well, I rather did, having gone back about 3.5 miles from where I'd been putting these things in front of the forward localities, but there was rather less of a war 3.5 miles back, but that made me very glad to be with units like the 47th Archwoodston.
Did you have anything to do with their assault pioneers? Were you involved with them in any way?
Assault pioneers, well, I don't quite know, really. No, we didn't have any, but I mean, we had pioneers were sort of labouring people, but assault engineering, I find it a peculiar thing, because I mean, later on in Kohima, I did quite a lot of that because we were at very close quarters. No, I didn't come across any of it.
When you were with the Rajputs, did you get involved in helping them to construct their own forward positions? Is that part of your
No, I don't think I did. I did for the gunners, because that was a fairly substantial exercise, getting a 25-pounder dug in. No, the infantry managed their own.
Did their own digging. When, what sort of positions did they construct? When they, for example, when they were facing Razabil, how were they dug in? Were they in one-man pits or two-man pits?
Two-man, usually. Yes. And I was trying to think of battalion headquarters. That wasn't... I think in an attack, they were very often just a feature in the ground. I can remember being with them at battalion headquarters, and they had a wonderful officer there. He must have been a white Russian. He was called Chodska, I remember, and everybody called him Popsky. He was a very agreeable fellow. And he and I were by a radio set. I think it was a 38 or 48 or something. It was a sort of pack thing. Great, enormous thing by modern standards for a radio, and a very close range and all the rest of it. And it had an aerial that went straight up. And old Trotsky was talking into this thing, and I was just by him, and a shell landed somewhere in there, and a splinter came roaring past and took the aerial out, you see. And old Trotsky looked up, saw this thing, and said into a microphone that wasn't transmitting at all, "Out." Very cool customer. So we weren't dug in. We were just sitting or on the ground, but I knew we weren't in a trench.
And when the infantry did dig in, when they were forward, did they put in overhead cover or did they just have open slits?
No, they just had... They very seldom had cover. Very seldom. Which, I think... Well, certainly at Kohima we tried to have cover because we got air bursts the whole time when the things hit the trees. But they were regarded, really, rather as a luxury, which is foolish of us. If we'd been as... hard-working as the Japs, we'd have done that. Mind you, I mean, battalion headquarters and RAPs and dressing stations, we dug those in and put cover on them. But the weapon pits almost invariably had no cover because you couldn't really operate a rifle or a Bren gun or something with all that stuff. I don't know that some people may have done it, but I certainly don't remember top cover on weapon pits.
You mentioned in your account that in March 1944 you were involved on in the Mayo tunnels. I think it's on security work. What did that involve doing?
Oh, did I? I don't remember that. Yes. What I did then... I think I can remember, yes. Well, Mayo Tunnels, my main job there, I was with the company then, field company, not on detachment or under command. There was a bridge which had carried the railway, probably destroyed by us when we retreated. And it was a deep gorge with a very high pier. 80 feet, probably more, brick pier, and two girders coming up through the other side. And we had to put a bailey across, and I had to get the girders out of the way because they were obstructing the bailey. And I was working on this by day, and at night, for security reasons, I was within the brigade box. And the way we did this was to put, I think one span was okay, just the other one had been blown. So we put on the end of the existing span a shed legs, you know, two legs and a transom, and tackle and all the rest of it. And we lifted this girder and lowered it, you see, or the two of them. At night, we went back to the box, and I can remember one night when we got back weary from the sun and the hard work and all the rest of it to our place to go to sleep, we were suddenly stood to because the Japanese had organized what they called a jitter party, or what we called a jitter party. And they'd go out to provoke fire from us to find out where everybody was. Anyway, they took a wrong turning and they got into the brigade box, you see. And I didn't know anything about this, but I was told they were around somewhere. And their problem was to get out. And I suppose we always dug in. Yes, I was in a hole in the ground, I can remember. And it was full moon, and were facing, I was facing slightly downhill towards the perimeter of the box. And up above us, on a little hillock, were the Hyderabad regiment, state regiment. They were a machine gun regiment, and a machine gun battalion. And we were down below on the sort of flat ground, and we dragged ourselves out of sleep, and we were staring into the moonlight, wondering what the hell was going to happen. And suddenly there was a shout from the hillock where the Hyderabad regiment was, of Khabardar Risala Agya, and it, which means, look out, stand by to repel cavalry. And I thought, whatever is the chap talking about? Well, what had happened was the Japs had got into the box and they couldn't get out. Well, they were wondering how to get out. So they went into the mule lines, and where the mules were picketed with a rope round their fetlock and to a picket, and they cut the rope, and they released about however many of these mules, well, one per man, I think, and they set them off in a stampede, and they ran alongside, hanging on to their manes, and they came straight past me. So I'm able to say that I've withstood a cavalry charge. Very alarming, especially when it comes from behind.
Did anyone open fire on them?
Oh, almost invariably. Well, no, I don't think they did. I don't think they knew what had happened. It was only because I was very close that I could see the Japs. Mm. No, they just thought they'd lost the mules. No, they got away absolutely scot-free. Very clever of them.
Do you have any notion of how many of them there were involved in that?
Oh, about eight. Not a lot.
Were they a frequent occurrence, the visits from jitter parties?
Oh, yes. We got quite a lot of that. And the thing to do was just to remain quiet. Mm. And they shoved off.
How was it that you left the Rajputs and gone back to the field company?
Well, it depends what our task was. You see, yes. We were under the brigade, and the brigade would, or the brigadier would decide if there was an attack, an operation going on, then he wanted the point battalion very often to have a sapper under command. It was almost invariably me.
Well, you seem to have been quite happy doing that.
Well, I was glad to get away from the company because it was a bit humourless.
How then was it that you came to be with the 4th Royal West Kent? This was in April 44.
Yes, well, we suddenly got this. The Japanese put in two, they hope, coordinated attacks. One was into the Arakan, followed by one which came in from the Chindwin onto the Dimapur Imphal Road. One was called Yugo and the other was called Nugo, or something, I forget now. And in Yugo, the one which happened in March, I think, early March 1944, they sent quite a small force. I should say, not even a brigade strength, up through 7 Division, 7 Indian Division. And this was dealt with satisfactorily, mainly through the adoption of air supply. And we were able to withstand them being on our lines of communication, and we still fought, so we were all right. Well, now, as soon as that was over, they put the other attack in up onto the to Imphal, and we had to, poor old Slim had to bolster the defences up in Imphal, and due to I think, the great moral courage of Mountbatten, whom I admire. I know he's a vain fellow, but I think he was a very good chap. He took, at his own behest and against all orders, he took American planes off the hump carrying supplies into China and transported the whole of 5th Indian Division up to Assam, which was really quite something.
How long did it take to do that move by air?
I'm damned if I know. I think about 4 or 5 days, that's about all.
What aircraft did you fly in?
Well, we flew in a thing called a Curtiss Commando, which was rather like a DC-3, but different. But there were some DC-3s as well, which were Royal Air Force. But to augment those, we had to have the others. So we went by road to whatever the landing strip was, towards Cox's Bazaar, I suppose. And then we flew from there to Dimapur. And I forget, well, with the last to go, I think we were, 161 Brigade, were the last to go. And we got to Dimapur, just the road was cut to Imphal. Otherwise, we'd have gone to Imphal.
How did you get from Dimapur down to Kohima?
Well, it's about 41 miles, and it's all sort of wiggly, and it's from, well, the level of the Brahmaputra in the Assam Valley up to about 8,000 feet, I think. 6,000, yes.
Did you do that on foot, or did you have transport?
Oh, no, I had transport. And the awful thing was, of course, that the commander of that particular part of, well, what is India, really, was an area commander. I forget what his name was, but it was a line of communication chap, you see, and he, although he was part of Four Corps, there was a lack of communication somewhere. We had to go up to defend Kohima as a brigade. And then we were suddenly told, no, we've got to go back to Dimapur and protect Dimapur from the Japs, you see. And then they had a further change of heart, and they wanted us to go back into Kohima again. And so
it must have been rather confusing to get orders going to and fro.
Ah, dreadful. Because we'd already dug in Kohima, and I'd been doing a sort of rearguard thing down the Jessamy track, I can remember. We knew the Japs were coming, and everything was pretty fraught, but not as bad as it became later.
When you were on that rear guard, were you acting as infantry, or were you...
No, as sappers, yes. We were making the road passable, I think.
So it was track improvement?
Yes.
Yeah. Were you able to make it jeepable, or was it...
Yes, we used to have these ridiculous things called corduroy roads. You cut a lot of tree trunks down, and or boughs, and lay them flat, and picket them down. And
sounds a very laborious way of improving a track.
Yes, and it's not terribly effective. I mean, the great road engineer, Finn Hillwright, said, no road foundation is so good as the earth properly drained. And drainage is everything in a road. And in torrential rain, it's very difficult. That's better. Anyway, we're still on the air, yes. After that, we went down to Dimapur, which was pretty hopeless, and up we went again. But this time the whole brigade went up, but by that time the perimeter of Kohima had shrunk considerably, and there was only room for one battalion.
What sort of positions had you dug in when you there when you first arrived then, before you were sent back to Dumanfor?
We had a position in a hospital, an IGH, which by the time we got back was occupied by the Japanese, you see. So we had to occupy a very small area.
Well, your sap was also dug in fighting positions.
Well, when we got the second time?
The first time. Went down there the first time.
I don't think we were, no.
You were too busy on the track then?
Yes.
But so you went back to Dimapur. Did you dig in at Dimapur before you were sent back to Kohima?
I doubt if we had time, and I don't think we did, no.
So you got back to Kohima, and what happened to you then on your second arrival at Kohima?
Well, that was another time when I disobeyed orders to beneficial result. We were given a disembarkation point, which was where the road from Naga village joined the main road to Imphal from Dimapur. And when I came, because the West Kents went in first, then the gunners, then the field ambulance, and I was behind the field ambulance. I don't know if there's anybody behind me, I forget. But as we rounded the bend north of Kohima, about 2 miles short of it, I saw the scene ahead of me and thought, no, I'm not going there, because as people got out of the debussed, they were being plastered by the Japanese artillery. So I just stopped short and disembarked all my blokes, and we carried everything up this long sloping hill, quite a way, about a half a mile, I suppose. And we carried everything. And we had to leave our vehicles on the road, but that was that. And thank God we did, because otherwise, I mean, we didn't lose anybody. We got up to just the edge of what was going to be the final perimeter and dug in there like billio. And I did a check to see if we were all there, and there was one man missing. And I always remember him, except called Suraj Uddin. It means Suraj's son, I think. He was a very cocky fellow. And the company commander for quite a time had him as his bodyguard. Useless fellow, I think. And he'd gone missing. And I should describe that just before I took a check, there was an awful racket of mortaring and all the rest of it going on just over the brow of the hill where we were. And when it stopped, a complete regiment of Nepalese, and they weren't Gurkhas, I mean, they were the same tribe, but they didn't have British officers, and they shoved off down up the road, you see, back to Dimapur. And they came straight through our lines. It was very demoralizing, because to see these chaps, wide-eyed with fright, with their officers well in front, going through us, was very alarming. So I took this check, and I found one chap missing, and he'd gone absent with these blokes.
Well, he went back with the Nepalese?
Yeah. And of course they couldn't get through. And so he came back looking rather miserable the next day. And I thought, well, now what? I suppose it had been the first war. I just threw him up against the wall and shot him, I suppose. But I thought, well, no, they're pointless. So every time we moved, which was like the next day, and again we moved the day after, we were all digging like mad. By the time we'd got our weapon pits down, we were fairly dreary, but there was one thing that still had to be dug, and that was the latrines. And Suraj Uddin was a sort of permanent latrine digger after that, which I think was a salutary lesson to him.
Did he improve?
No.
He didn't.
Plenty of room for improvement, but... Oh, he's less cocky, but useless.
How far down did you dig when you were getting a weapon pit into the ground?
Well, first of all, I mean, just to get your body underneath, I suppose, about a foot, but... even at Okshu, can you imagine that, in 1941, we were digging World War One trench sections. Absolutely amazing. No, we didn't go in for anything like that.
How long would it take you to get yourself a satisfactory fighting position, Doug?
Well, it depends on the earth. I mean, there's a lot of stone around, but I suppose 4 hours? About a couple of yards of stuff to pick and shovel.
Were you formally attached or formally under command of the Royal West Kents at that stage?
Yes.
When did that happen? Did that happen during your journey from Dimapur on the second
occasion? No, that happened in Dimapur.
In Dimapur.
Drew up a brigade operational order and I was...
You were sent off to them?
Yes.
How did they compare the way they did things and in their style, command and so on, to the Rajputs?
Very different. I mean, they didn't have the panache, shall we say, of the Rajputs, but they were a territorial battalion, absolutely marvellous, great. I still see them. I go to their... it's an anniversary, it's always in April, King of my anniversary thing, and that's... splendid people. Very much of the Cockney about them. See the funny side of anything. And I can remember when we went on this patrol I was talking about earlier in the Arrow Cairn with Jack Cargill and co. Before we set off, we went to the West Kents who were holding the forward positions and went up the top of the hill to have a look to see what we were going to patrol during the night. And I can remember coming down straits and rhododendron clad hills and seeing a wonderful sight. Round one of the hillocks came 4 mules and they were being led by the muleteers with 4/7 Rajput mess waiters there. And they drew up below us, and they spread a tablecloth, I know it was linen, on the paddy field, and brought out the silver and all this, and we sat down to supper. And the remarks from the West Kents was really, I wish I could remember them, but they thought this was bizarre. But why not? We fed very well. No, we just did things differently. I think our troops liked it that way.
How did your soldiers get on with the West Kent soldiers?
Brilliantly, yes, and vice versa. Oh, yes, oh, no, they're marvellous. The West Kent soldiers had a sort of smattering of Urdu and rather sort of Kipling-esque.
And it sounds from what you were saying as though you were being deployed really as infantry in the defence perimeter at Kohima.
Well, first we were digging a hell of a lot. We dug the RAP and the battalion headquarters and...
was that a forward headquarters rather than a main?
Well, it was... everything was one there. Main was in forward. You couldn't... Everything was forward, yes.
How many people then did the battalion headquarters pit have to hold?
Oh, about 3, I suppose. Whilst operator, colonel, adjutant.
Yeah.
Second command, maybe. 4.
What about the aid post? What capacity did you give that?
Well, we had to dig stretcher length for each casualty, and there must have been hundreds.